Nicomedeus, A Brief History of Tomorrow, Chapter 9, The Great Decoupling. The preceding pages took us on a brief tour of recent scientific discoveries that undermine the liberal philosophy. It's time to examine the practical implications of these scientific discoveries. Liberals uphold free markets and democratic elections because they believe that every human is a uniquely valuable individual whose free choices are the ultimate source of authority. In the 21st century, three practical developments might make this belief obsolete. Number one, humans will lose their economic and military usefulness, hence the economic and political system will stop attaching much value to them. Number two, the system will still find value in humans collectively, but not in unique individuals. Number three, the system will still find value in some unique individuals, but these will be a new elite of upgraded superhumans rather than the mass of the population. Let's examine all three threats in detail. The first, that technological developments will make humans economically and militarily useless, will not prove that liberalism is wrong on a philosophical level. But in practice, it is hard to see how democracy, free markets, and other liberal institutions can survive such a blow. After all, liberalism did not become the dominant ideology simply because its philosophical arguments were the most accurate. Rather, liberalism succeeded because there was much political, economic, and military sense in ascribing value to every human being. On the mass battlefields of modern industrial wars, and in the mass production lines of modern industrial economies, every human counted. There was value to every pair of hands that could hold a rifle or pull a lever. In 1793, the royal houses of Europe sent their armies to strangle the French Revolution in its cradle. The firebrands in Paris reacted by proclaiming the levée en masse and unleashing the first total war. On 23rd of August, the National Convention decreed that from this moment until such time as its enemies shall have been driven from the soil of the Republic, all Frenchmen are in permanent requisition for the services of the armies. The young men shall fight, the married men shall forge arms and transport provisions, the women shall make tents and clothes and shall serve in the hospitals, the children shall turn old lint into linen, and the old men shall betake themselves to the public squares in order to arouse the courage of the warriors and preach hatred of kings and the unity of the Republic. This decree sheds interesting light on the French Revolution's most famous document, the Declaration of the Rights of Man and of the Citizen, which recognized that all citizens have equal value and equal political rights. Is it a coincidence that universal rights were proclaimed at the same historical juncture that universal conscription was decreed? The scholars may quibble about the exact relations between the two. In the following two centuries, a common argument in defense of democracy explained that giving people political rights is good because the soldiers and workers of democratic countries perform better than those of dictatorships. Allegedly, granting people political rights increases their motivation and their initiative, which is useful both on the battlefield and in the factory. Thus, Charles Eliot, president of Harvard from 1869 to 1909, wrote on the 5th of August, 1917, in the New York Times that democratic armies fight better than armies aristocratically organized and autocratically governed, and that the armies of nations in which the mass of the people determine legislation, elect their public servants, and settle questions of peace and war, fight better than the armies of an autocrat who rules by right of birth and by commission from the Almighty. A similar rationale stood behind the enfranchisement of women in the wake of the First World War. Realizing the vital role of women in total industrial wars, countries saw the need to give them political rights in peacetime. Thus, in 1918, President Woodrow Wilson became a supporter of women's suffrage, explaining to the US Senate that the First World War could not have been fought either by the other nations engaged or by America if it had not been for the services of women, services rendered in every sphere, not only in the fields of effort in which we have been accustomed to see them work, but wherever men have worked and upon the very skirts and edges of the battle itself. we shall not only be distrusted, but shall deserve to be distrusted if we do not enfranchise them with the fullest possible enfranchisement. However, in the 21st century, the majority of both men and women might lose their military and economic value. Gone is the mass conscription of the two world wars. The most advanced armies of the 21st century rely far more on cutting-edge technology. Instead of limitless cannon fodder, you now need only small numbers of highly trained soldiers, even smaller numbers of special forces, super warriors, and a handful of experts who know how to produce and use sophisticated technology. High-tech forces, manned by pilotless drones and cyberworms, are replacing the mass armies of the 20th century, and generals delegate more and more critical decisions to algorithms. Aside from their unpredictability and their susceptibility to fear, hunger, and fatigue, flesh and blood soldiers think and move on an increasingly irrelevant timescale. From the days of Nebuchadnezzar to those of Saddam Hussein, despite myriad technological improvements, war was waged on an organic timetable. Discussions lasted for hours, battles took days, and wars dragged on for years. Cyber wars, however, may last just a few minutes. When a lieutenant on shift at Cyber Command notices something odd is going on, she picks up the phone to call her superior, who immediately alerts the White House. Alas, by the time the president reaches for the red handset, the war has already been lost. Within seconds, a sufficiently sophisticated cyber strike might shut down the US power grid, wreck US flight control centers, cause numerous industrial accidents in nuclear plants and chemical installations, disrupt the police, army, and intelligence communication networks, and wipe out financial records so that trillions of dollars simply vanish without trace and nobody knows who owns what. The only thing curbing public hysteria is that, with the internet, television, and radio down, people will not be aware of the full magnitude of the disaster. On a smaller scale, suppose two drones fight each other in the air. One drone cannot fire a shot without first receiving the go-ahead from a human operator in some bunker. The other drone is fully autonomous. Which do you think will prevail? If in 2093, the decrepit European Union sends its drones and cyborgs to snuff out a new French Revolution, the Paris Commune might press into service every available hacker, computer, and smartphone, but it will have little use for most humans, except perhaps as human shields. It is telling that already today, in many asymmetrical conflicts, the majority of citizens are reduced to serving as human shields for advanced armaments. Even if you care more about justice than victory, you should probably opt to replace your soldiers and pilots with autonomous robots and drones. Human soldiers murder, rape, and pillage, and even when they try to behave themselves, they all often kill civilians by mistake. Computers programmed with ethical algorithms could far more easily conform to the latest rulings of the International Criminal Court. In the economic sphere, too, the ability to hold a hammer or press a button is becoming less valuable than before. In the past, there were many things only humans could do, but now robots and computers are catching up, and may soon outperform humans in most tasks. True, computers function very differently from humans, and it seems unlikely that computers will become human-like anytime soon. In particular, it does not seem that computers are about to gain consciousness, and to start experiencing emotions and sensations. Over the last decade, there has been an immense advance in computer intelligence, but there has been exactly zero advance in computer consciousness. As far as we know, computers in 2016 are no more conscious than their prototypes in the 1950s. However, we are on the brink of a momentous revolution. Humans are in danger of losing their value because intelligence is decoupling from consciousness. Until today, high intelligence always went hand in hand with a developed consciousness. Only conscious beings could perform tasks that required a lot of intelligence, such as playing chess, driving cars, diagnosing diseases, or identifying terrorists. However, we are now developing new types of non-conscious intelligence that can perform such tasks far better than humans. For all these tasks are based on pattern recognition, and non-conscious algorithms may soon excel human consciousness in recognizing patterns. This raises a novel question. Which of the two is really important? Intelligence or consciousness? As long as they went hand in hand, debating their relative value, was just a pastime for philosophers. But in the 21st century, this is becoming an urgent political and economic issue. And it is sobering to realize that at least for armies and corporations, the answer is straightforward. Intelligence is mandatory, but consciousness is optional. Armies and corporations cannot function without intelligent agents, but they don't need consciousness and subjective experiences. The conscious experiences of a flesh and blood taxi driver are infinitely richer than those of a self-driving car, which feels absolutely nothing. The taxi driver can enjoy music while navigating the busy streets of Seoul. His mind may expand in awe as he looks up at the stars and contemplates the mysteries of the universe. His eyes may fill with tears of joy when he sees his baby girl taking her very first step. But the system does not need all that from a taxi driver. All it really wants is to bring passengers from point A to point B as quickly, safely, and cheaply as possible. And the autonomous car will soon be able to do that far better than a human driver, even though it cannot enjoy music or be awestruck by the magic of existence. Indeed, if we forbid humans to drive taxis and cars altogether, and give computer algorithms monopoly over traffic, we can then connect all vehicles to a single network, and thereby make car accidents virtually impossible. In August 2015, one of Google's experimental self-driving cars had an accident. As it approached a crossing and detected pedestrians wishing to cross, it applied its brakes. A moment later, it was hit from behind by a sedan whose careless human driver was perhaps contemplating the mysteries of the universe instead of watching the road. This could not have happened if both vehicles were steered by intellect computers. The controlling algorithm would have known the position and intentions of every vehicle on the road, and would not have allowed two of its marionettes to collide. Such a system will save lots of time, money, and human lives, but it will also do away with the human experience of driving a car and with tens of millions of human jobs. Some economists predict that sooner or later, unenhanced humans will be completely useless, while robots and 3D printers replace workers in manual jobs, such as manufacturing shirts. Highly intelligent algorithms will do the same to white-collar occupations, bank clerks, and travel agents who a short time ago were completely secure from automation have become endangered species. How many travel agents do we need when we can use our smartphones to buy plane tickets from an algorithm? Stock exchange traders are also in danger. Most trade today is already being managed by computer algorithms, which can process in a second more data than a human can in a year, and that can react to the data much faster than a human can blink.